and welcome. Today's the 6th of October, 2009, and let's start with talking about what's going on in the heavens, in the sky, astrologically speaking. We do, or we use, or we follow Vedic astrological science here. We don't follow the astrological science, the Western science, that you find in the newspaper under horoscopes. That is the one followed by millions of people in the Western world. But it is incorrectly calculated. And scientists, that is astronomers, will verify that. So millions of people are following a system that actually is incorrect. Not to say that it doesn't have some effectiveness and validity, but its calculation is wrong to begin with. So we use Vedic. And Vedic dates back to 3000 BC India. It comes from the Vedas. Veda means knowledge or science. And the Vedas are books including all the sciences and all the fields of knowledge. And you name it, it's there. Astrology is considered to be a divine science because it's the science of the heavens and the planets and how the planets affect our lives. So recently, Saturn moved in the sky into Virgo. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But maybe we'll talk first about the economy. That may be of interest to some people. If you've heard this from me before, forgive me. But I know most of you haven't, so. Last fall, I wrote an article, and it's up on the website, 2009, The Gathering Clouds, I think we called it. Excuse me. And I predicted what was going to happen in 2009. Well, it happened. I wasn't the only guy who predicted it. Lots of people did from using their own methods. And that was that there would be a fairly serious economic collapse that would take place. More serious than any recent economic collapse or any one that you can remember in your lifetime, certainly. Or any one that I can remember in my lifetime. And we're coming toward the end of that period now. So I'm going to give three dates to begin with. The first date is October 12th, 6 days from now. Jupiter is the planet of finances, economy, wealth, money, cash flow, the stock market, banks, the banking system. You got the idea. When Jupiter is weak or afflicted in the sky, then you see what happens this year. Jupiter is with Rahu in the sky. Rahu is a shadow influence, a dark influence. When you find Jupiter and Rahu together, you have a yoga or a combination for bankruptcy. Has anybody gone bankrupt in the past year that you ever heard of?
A couple of hundreds.
Yeah, lots of banks to start with. Some countries, I mean, what was it, Finland? Iceland? Bankrupt. Ireland's trying real hard to go bankrupt right now, seemingly. And many companies to yoga for bankruptcy. That's what we would expect. So, Jupiter happens to be traveling backwards or retrograde motion as we speak. Not forwards, but backwards. October 12th, he goes forwards again. When Jupiter's traveling backwards, it can tighten up the money supply. Well, money's pretty tight. And try to get a loan. Try to get a mortgage. Report back to us, please. Tell us how you did. But it should mean that money will start to loosen up and become more available. I don't mean here only. Yes, I do mean here. But I mean everywhere. So that's the first piece of good news. That happens October 12th. It might bode well for the stock market. Perhaps. We'll see. And it will bode well for the economy, slowly but surely. And we've seen this time around, more than ever before, how much we are a global society and how much we are interlinked. And when one country suffers, even on the other side of the world, it has such a reverberating effect on us all. Used to be that Ireland would only suffer once something happened in England, no? But now it's far more global. So one thing, when Jupiter goes retrograde, I spoke at a conference. In fact, I was the featured speaker in London at the British Association of Vedic Astrology's annual conference back in April. And there was a gentleman there. I can't think of his name. R.G. Krishnan. R.G. Krishnan. Very distinguished gentleman, Indian gentleman, been an astrologer for decades. And he pointed out that when Jupiter goes retrograde, backwards, the price of gold goes up. So Jupiter's been retrograde for the past 4 months, gold, all-time high, $1,000 an ounce. Yes, you should have bought gold. A lot of people are taking their gold and taking it in. They're melting it down and giving them money. So, but gold and silver and these things are hard currencies. They're always good in troubled times. And gems. Gems are always good. Took it into heaven.
No. Somebody broke into her house and took all her gold and left like her pearls and things like that. Just took all her gold.
Oh my goodness.
With old gold as well, actually. It wasn't just sort of the modern.
So, October 12th, Jupiter goes direct. Next date, November 2nd. 2 weeks later. Rahu in the sky. And K2, directly opposite Rahu, 180 degrees. North node is Rahu. South node is K2. So when they move, and they always move like this. Together. And they will move out of Capricorn and Cancer, respectively. So that means that Rahu will be away from Jupiter. And that means also that the economy and finances and the money supply, all the rest of that, should again improve another incremental step. So that's November 2nd. And Jupiter will not be with Rahu again for at least 12 years in the sky. Last time Jupiter was with Rahu, they had the Black Monday, the stock market crash, 1987. Time before that was 1929. And that's when the Great Depression came. See? But you lived to enjoy 2009. Similar. So the next date is December 19th. December 19th, Jupiter will go out of Capricorn because Jupiter in Capricorn is debilitated, as weak can be. And that's why this year was so devastating. He wasn't just with Rahu, he was debilitated. that's like, I don't know, what would be an example? It'd be you with swine flu. Being attacked by hoodlums outside your front door. The hoodlums would be wrong. Going to get your post.
That would be a pain in the ass.
That's the only analogy I could think of. I'm sorry. So this December 19th, Jupiter goes into Aquarius in the sky. We talked about that on one of our Tuesday evenings. This is a very, very auspicious time. A wonderful time spiritually. It'll continue for the next 5 months, December 19th until May 2nd of 2010. And that brings up the Maha Kumbh Mela, when Jupiter will be in Aquarius, and that's when about a million people in India, I mean a million people, will all gather at the confluence of the Ganges, Yamuna, and the Saraswati rivers to bathe in the river at an auspicious time and pray and chant and meditate. And if you want to go, you can. But that happens once every 12 years. Maha Kumbh Mela. Maha means the great one, the big one. Kumbh means the sign of Aquarius, and Mela is gather. This is a Mela gather. So that's all good news. It's all good news. Now, the fact that we're in so much debt, you know, that's not going to disappear on December 19th, unfortunately. And the fact that the government has bailed out so many banks and companies, different governments have done this. So that's not going to go away. That'll take time. But I really think we're out of the woods as far as turning things around economically. I don't know how quick or how slow the recovery will be. I think it'll be rather slow, not quick. If you're interested in local politics, this government will fall. They're finished.
Woohoo!
I don't want
to fall soon. Yeah, how soon?
Well, I'm talking now about the Ireland's chart. The chart of Ireland for the year 2009 to 2010. March 09 to March 2010. And that chart shows that whoever the local government, the current government is, it will not win re-election. Between March of 09 and March of 2010. Now, if they have an election after March of 2010, I still don't think they'll win, but that's the time period. Now, interestingly, because Ireland and England are so close together, I mean, geographically, England has the exact same chart, yearly chart. And guess what's going to happen to Mr. Brown?
Yeah.
He's finished.
Yeah.
They're done. So those are predictions. We'll see what happens.
Do you have any idea of what government is going
to... I don't. No, I don't. I didn't look that carefully.
Do all astrology charts start from March to March?
They start from the lunation date when the sun is in Pisces. Lunation date is when the new moon day when the sun is in Pisces. So the moon and the sun have to be an exact date. So for example, if the sun is on the new moon day is at 21 degrees 15 minutes of Pisces, the moon must be at 21 degrees 15 minutes of Pisces. And when those two planets intersect at that, then you calculate the chart. That's how it's done. It seems to work pretty well. So, that's what's coming up there. I had begun to say Saturn just moved on 9909. People are going on about 9909, especially in Chinese, because numbers for them are everything. And I don't know, we heard there's going to be different kinds of convergences and harmonics, this and that and the other. Well, I don't know about all that, but I know that Saturn moved on that day. When Saturn moves, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. Because Saturn stays in a sign, any given sign in the sky, for 2 to 2.5 years at a stretch. Sometimes, you know, he'll be in a sign, he'll go forward, then he'll decide he's going to go back or go out of the sign for a couple months and then go back again, keep going. That happens, but now he's moved into Virgo. He'll be in Virgo for the next 2 years, September 2009 until November 2011. Saturn had been in Leo for the past 2 years. Leo, did anybody know what Leo represents? Power and governments, banks, institutions. Well, what happened? They tumbled like houses of, like a house of cards. Virgo is a whole different thing. Virgo is service. Virgo's about serving people, not ripping them off. Governments are supposed to protect people. They're supposed to represent people, protect them, look after them, see to their welfare. That's the duty of a government and government officials. And maybe we're coming into a time now where we will be more diligent in what we expect from our government officials. But as I've said time and time again, on another level, whoever we elect, whoever our representatives are, in some way, are a reflection of us, aren't they? We can point fingers at them and blame them, and sometimes very justifiably, but they are also a reflection of us. Anyway, it should mean that people with a greater attitude of service and welfare or benefit to humanity would be coming into power. That's what it should mean.
People that don't feel their karmic discharge.
Yeah, well, you're already seeing a lot of people, especially here. I mean, look how many people are being exposed. Mm-hmm. You had this McCarthy report. You had this Ryan report. Every day I'm reading about somebody in Irish government that is...
This guy,
yeah, they're calling him Johnny Cash. You know, and this other guy for FOSS, this Roddy Malloy, you know, there's just, there's a scandal on every page. So, you know, that was good in the sense of cleansing and purging. So we might get some, it's nice to, there are some honest people in government. There are some, you know. So to get a few more in, that would be good. Virgo is an earth sign, so it's about practicality. It's about doing things that are actually helpful and practical and useful to people. It's also sacrifice. Sacrifice means to make sacred. People think sacrifice means to do without. Well, it can be when you sacrifice something on behalf of somebody, perhaps. You make a sacrifice. But actually, the word means sacer and facere in Latin, to make sacred. That what we do is has a higher consciousness in it. So everything we do, like we've talked about numerous times, we do for God. we do with God in mind. If you don't like the term God, Spirit, Higher Self. You offer everything you do to God. That's what makes it sacred. And then it won't carry a karmic reaction. In yoga philosophy, we have the law of karma and of reincarnation. These are two extremely important laws. Most people understand them. Everybody believes in karma. You reap what you sow. What goes around comes around. And people think, well, it's good to generate good karma, not good to generate bad karma. Yes, but no. Not quite correct. When you generate good karma or bad karma, you're compelled to take another birth. To suffer or enjoy the results of that karma. Action, reaction. So people will say, well, what's wrong with that? I want to come back and enjoy myself. If I'm a good person, did good things. This is not the real world. This is not the spiritual world. We don't actually belong here. This is a dream world, if you will. It's a world of illusion down here in the material world. And in the material world, a soul, as we all are, a being, is like a fish out of water. We don't belong here. How can I prove that? Simple. You take birth. You grow old. Who wants to grow old? Show of hands. Nobody. Who wants sickness and ill health? Nobody. Who wants suffering and misery of various kinds? Nobody. Who wants to die? Nobody. Yet everybody dies. Even worse than your own death is the death of your loved ones. It hurts a lot more. A lot more. This proves we don't belong here. Because our nature is to live, not die, to be happy. Not to suffer. That's our real nature. That's the nature of the soul within the body. So we all know that when the body dies, everything's still there. All the organs are there. You open up the body, everything's there. All the parts are there. What's missing? Nothing's missing as far as you can see. Nothing's missing. The soul is missing. Symptom of the soul in the body is consciousness. Consciousness. Sleeping body, the breath, the breathing. It's consciousness. When the consciousness leaves the body, what do we do with the body? We have to get rid of it. Can't keep it. So, when you generate good or bad actions, you generate good or bad karma, you get another body. To suffer and enjoy the fruits of your actions. And one other thing, very important, desire. Desire. If at the time of death you have one desire, material desire, desire connected to matter. This is matter. We have spirit, we have matter. That's matter. Dense. Spirit is what animates me. If my spirit left my body right now, what would happen to my body? He'd drag me outside, exactly. Leave me in the rain, wouldn't matter.
Such as start smelling.
Not in the rain. So, if at the time of death you have material desires, oh, but I still want to do this, and I still want to do that, and I needed one of those, and I really wanted to buy that particular property, and whatever they might be, no problem. You get another body. How many bodies will you get? How many opportunities do you get? How many waves come in from the sea? How many grains of sand are on the beach? That's how many you get. Unlimited. As many as you need. Until when? Until you wake up. Until you wake up. Until you stop believing you're a body. Start believing you're a soul and start acting like a soul. Not like a body. If you have one desire at the time of your death, just one, material desire, connected to the body, connected to your ego, you'll get another body. That is the unlimited mercy of God. Oh, you got something you still need to do? No problem. Here you go. So, at the time of death, all your desires, and there are certain philosophies that say you must become desireless. Well, good luck with that one. Very hard to become desireless. If you are in a consciousness of being a soul, then you desire that which is connected to the soul, to spirit, to God, to the divine plan. To that which is eternal and not temporary. So you have no more material desires at the point of death. Guess what? You don't need another body. You don't have to come here anymore. Your, what do they call it when they send you? No, yeah, moksha, but when in school, when you have to stay after school, what do they call it? Detention. No more detention.
Unless, of course, you create some other karma for yourself.
Correct. Correct. If you have karma to pay or to enjoy, if you have desires, come back. So, my strong advice to you is to not come back. A soul can achieve moksha. Moksha is liberation. Liberation. Freedom from samsara, the wheel of repeated birth and death. And do not think for a minute, just because you all have these nice human bodies, that you will get another human body. Not necessarily. According to yoga philosophy, there are 8,400,000 species in the universe. And you can go up and down the evolutionary ladder. Up or down. Depending on your behavior and what you desire. So a human body may not be the best for you. Another body might be better. So if you're a really wonderful person, a Mother Teresa type, for example, she's not the only one, but, and you really do a lot of selfless work and help a lot of people, then you will get the body of a celestial, an angel, a divine, godly body, in the heavenly realm? Is this the spiritual world? No. It's not. It's a much higher realm than where we are. And you get all kinds of wonderful karma there, that you, whatever karma you've generated, it's like you get the results of your actions. It's like your bank balance. And you can stay up there until you've exhausted all of your credits. Just like the bank. You can use your laser card, your ATM card, to your heart's content until you run out of good credits. You run out of money. Same. And then you come back down.
Why don't you go on to the next which is spiritual?
Because you're not ready to do that yet. Your goal may be still to enjoy yourself. We know even in this world, you know, we live comfortable lives. Well, we know there's places more beautiful than right here. And people who live a much higher standard of living than we do. Right? We know that. And there's the opposite. You know, we could be living in Somalia right now. And it's way, way worse. So we know that even here on this plane, you know, we're here and you've got something way better, you've got something way worse. So in the universe, it's the same. There are much higher realms and much lower realms. So.
Where does it say, though, that you have to be down here to get up to the spiritual world?
Well, it does say that in some places. In the heavenly realms, where you go to enjoy the fruits of good work, real good work. Or if you, you know, like somebody, for example, who, I don't know, tries to rescue somebody who's in danger, and you die trying to rescue the person, you'll go immediately to the heavenly realms. Immediately. Because you've just sacrificed your life on behalf of somebody else. You know, this is a very, very noble thing to do. In the higher realms, in the heavenly worlds, generally people are enjoying themselves so much that they don't really think much about spiritual life because things are so great. They have a very, very, very long lifespan. I mean thousands of years. They don't age. They don't get sick. You can eat as much as you want. You don't get fat. You can have as much sex as you want and you don't get pregnant. If you don't want to get pregnant. But there's five different ways to get pregnant in the higher realms. And not only the way we know, just also by speech, by touch, by glance, by thought. It's two different ways.
How can you escape being pregnant?
Well, your intent is not to be pregnant, that's all. Your intent is not to be. So, you know, the mind is not on. When you're enjoying too much, you don't think about God. When things are great, people don't think about God. When you're suffering too much, you don't think about God. Well, although that's when people start to think about God, is when they're suffering. But then there's the hellish realms where people go to suffer.
Could these realms be, they're not realms in this world. Like if you think of the suffering on this planet.
Well, the planet shows you, this planet shows you the relativity of that. You can suffer on this planet too. Like I said, if you're living in a place like Somalia, you may as well be in hell. I mean, you could live in certain areas in Dublin.
Yeah.
For that matter.
Totally, yeah.
And it's very hellish. People are getting shot, and, you know, I read about these older people, and the kids are terrorizing them. Gangs of children. So,
suffer mental abuse even in a cultural environment.
Oh yeah.
A different kind of environment.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Where does that come into?
Well, suffering any kind of abuse is suffering bad karma. I mean, your life could be great in this area and absolutely dreadful in that area.
So how does one escape that circle?
Realizing.
Well, first of all, you have to realize it,
yeah.
And you have to say, okay, I'm not going to tolerate it anymore.
But you see, people realize it. They still don't know how.
And still, they don't know how to extricate themselves, okay. And sometimes they can't extricate themselves in this lifetime.
I think because people don't realize that it's a karmic reaction to their own actions of the past. So they don't take response. Not that you should, if a husband is beating a wife, she should not think that that is her fault. That is not what I'm saying here, so don't confuse it for that. But somewhere along the line, she has walked into this world of pain, and only she can walk herself out of it. Do you know what I mean?
You don't get away with anything in the world. Everything has a reaction. Nobody gets away with murder. Even when you get off for murder, you don't get off. Because the karma will come around at some point.
But should asking what's the key to help you stop having to suffer?
Well, it depends. Some people will go on suffering for decades in those situations, and they won't extricate themselves. Whereas other people will, at some point, put an end to it and put a stop to it.
But often you'll see people will attract something else when they get out of one situation.
Right, which tells you
what? What does that tell you?
That it tells you that their mental state, their belief system hasn't changed. So this is a person who's coming into this world believing they're guilty. I can show you hundreds and hundreds of people like this because they're clients of mine. Not all my clients are like that, some, but hundreds of them are. And they come into the lifetime believing they're guilty of something. Are they conscious of that? No. So what happens from early childhood is they are able to be manipulated by others using guilt to manipulate them, to get them to do this or not to do that. However, okay, that's usually one of the parents, maybe both. If you go to Catholic school, no one does it better than the nuns. They are expert using guilt. Employers, family members, spouse, and whose name is at the top of the list? That person themselves. They feel guilty. And a guilty person, even unconsciously guilty, believes they must be punished. Their wheel is a syndrome of guilt and punishment. Because we believe that if you're guilty, you got to be punished. So that person is unconsciously attracting people and circumstances and situations into her life that will create this punishment scenario for her. Until when? When is time served enough? When is it enough?
When is it enough?
When she says it is.
Yeah,
when she says it's enough. I can show you people that this has gone on for lifetimes. Not just this lifetime. When is it enough? You know, I have a lot of people who are connected to the Holocaust in Germany. I have a lot of Jewish clients. You can't even imagine the amount of guilt for the people who survived. They survived. Well, what did they do? They didn't do anything. Did they kill their fellow Jews? No. What did they do wrong? Nothing that we can see. They survived. And how they torment themselves for that? Because they survived. And that doesn't even make sense, honestly. You see, that's my point. You can't even get 2 and 2 equals 4 with that one. So guilt, people can torment themselves with guilt. Somehow or other, the person who's getting abused is carrying that guilt. And guaranteed, that person abused somebody else similarly in a previous lifetime. Guaranteed. You can see in a chart, for example, very easily as a horoscope. I could look at this and say, okay, you've been sexually abused, right? Yes. Well, it also shows that's what you did to somebody else in a previous lifetime. And there it is. It's coming back for you now. So what goes around, comes around. But that's not the point. The point is, the other side of karma is this, and this is the most important part of it. There's a lesson in it. And the lesson is, this is what it feels like to get sexually abused. It feels like this. It's the worst possible feeling. Now that I know what it feels like, I will never, ever, ever do anything like that to anybody again. In any lifetime to come. That's the lesson learned.
That's why. Where does it all start from? Where does all the negative karma start from? If you're born a soul, you didn't, as a pure soul, you didn't start abusing someone.
No. Well, according to the Vedas, according to the understanding of the Vedas, somehow or other, a soul who's living in the spiritual world says, you know, I don't really like God being at the center of everything. You know, why is God getting all the action and all the play? Why is he the center of the orbit? So God says, well, okay, no problem. If you don't want to worship me or go with my program, no problem. Here you go. Put you down into the material pool and put you into a body. And you can use your ego. And with your ego, you can become the center of your universe. And you have certain amount of free will. And it goes from there.
Mm. But I'm more curious, where does something as horrific as abuse start happening? I mean, if you're talking about pain, karmic...
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. You tell me.
Because we're given freedom.
You're getting freedom.
We do all those kind of things, you know, and that's just it. We've been given the freedom to do whatever we want.
You see, animals will only ever act like animals. It's called instinct. A dog will only act like a dog. A dog will never act like a cat. You've never seen it. A cat will never act like a dog. But people...
People can act.
People can act like humans, or they can act like animals, or they can act like gods, like angels. You see, that's the difference. We have a freedom of choice. You've met all three of these kinds of people. I know you have. So, I don't know how they propel themselves. In the Bhagavad Gita, which we're going to talk about, but we're clipping along here anyway, but we are talking about it directly or indirectly. Krishna explains to Arjuna, Krishna, who's God, who was on earth 5,000 years ago, he says that people have a desire. When that desire is frustrated, they become angry and resentful, and they spiral down, and they fall back down into the material pool in their next lifetime. And depending how angry they get and how frustrated they get, you know, that can also take them down through the lower species. So it's you, it's how you behave. We're all tested with various kinds of things. It's not, and difficulties that we have to go through. It's not so much that, we all have that. It's, did you get it? Did it teach you what it was meant to teach you? Did you learn? And did you then come out the other end of it?
The other thing I was going to say about karma and realizing that you've done bad things in your past, such as, you know, abuse or whatever, and you're facing that now this lifetime. When you first hear that, that can encourage the guilt. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to get the point that beyond that,
well, you have to include. See, the only way out of it all is forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way out. And you have to, at least in your heart, ask forgiveness of anybody you hurt. You don't always have to do it face to face, or by mail, or over the telephone. You know, if you think of confronting your parents who are getting old or are old about some issues you still have about how they treated you in your childhood, you may as well talk to the wall, because they're either not going to hear you, or they're going to say, they really won't know what on earth you're talking about. Or they won't respond, for example. So you can do it very effectively in meditation. You don't have to confront them. You can work through anything you need to work through in your meditation. And ask for forgiveness. If you need forgiveness from somebody, ask them for it in meditation. And you'll get it. If not the first time, you will get it. Very important. I mean, if you did things to people in a previous lifetime that you are now suffering for, you know, I've been doing this kind of work with people for 20 years. Guided healing meditation work, and it's been very effective. That's number one. The second thing is forgiving the self. You must forgive yourself. That's your point. It's essential. You can't forgive everybody and not you. Or as they say here in Ireland, get down off the cross, we need the wood. Victim, martyr. There's only three roles you can take in the world. Only three available. the victim, the victimizer, and the victor. 95% of the people in this world, I don't care where you go, are caught up in victim and victimizer roles. You're either being victimized or you're victimizing. Some people are such the victim, they're getting victimized by everybody. Victim martyr. You can't have a victim without a victimizer. You need somebody to victimize, you know, keep the thing going. So I married so-and-so. He's a wonderful victimizer. Perfect. What could be better? And then she gets rid of him and marries another guy and he victimizes her or whatever, right? That's what's going on. Now, she herself could be victimizing somebody, which often happens. The victor is the only role worth assuming. A victor victimizes no one and is victimized by no one. We call that win-win situation. No one loses. That is the only role. If you want to examine your relationships, which ones? Everybody, make your list, everybody. Are you victimizing any of these people? If you are, why are you? Are you being victimized by any of these people? If you are, why are you letting this happen? And when will you stop? And what's wrong with today? And the reply comes, well, it's not that easy. Correct. It isn't, especially when you're all conditioned to it. It's like giving up cigarettes. It's not that easy. It's an addiction. It's toxic.
What makes people sick? The confusion?
What makes people sick? All kinds of things make people sick. Sickness comes from harboring negative emotion in your being. Conflicts of ideas, conflicts of emotion, wounds, anger, frustration, resentment, criticism, blame, guilt, aimed at the self, aimed at others, aimed at you by others, or any combination you like. That invites negative energy. Now, if that negative energy comes in and immediately you release it, will you get sick? No. If you hang on to it, then the body goes, oh, what am I going to do with this? This negative energy. I've got to put it someplace. Because she won't let it go. Where are you going to put it? Where does the body put it? Let's find this weak place over here and stick it there. Let's put it in the brain. Let's put it in the heart. Let's put it in the reproductive area. Let's put it in the liver. Let's put it in the joints. Wherever. And then later on, we get a stroke. We get heart disease. We get fibroids. We get arthritis. We get a cancer. That's where it comes from. Now, you could say it comes from this and that and all these other reasons. Oh, all well and good. But this is where it comes from. Does it show up in somebody's astrology chart? Can you see it? Absolutely.
Karma that they need to experience that particular circumstance.
Amen. If you have negative karma and you have to experience a circumstance that the negative karma creates, does it have to go on for 20 years? Can you not just get it and learn the lesson and move on? Well, the answer to that is yes and yes. Yeah, it's got to go on for 20 years for this person. This person who keeps marrying abusive men. Or for this person, no, it doesn't need to go on. It went on for 6 months and that was it, finished. No more. I've been there, I've done that. I got it. Finished. Do you not have a friend who's come to you and said, oh, this and this and this and that? And you say, okay. What you need to do is this. Now go do that and you won't be in that situation anymore. And here we are, how many years down the line? It doesn't change. Just the faces change. Same. They never heard.
It's just being conscious.
Never heard you.
Your actions and your thoughts. Never need to do on a daily basis. But did you just chip away?
You must take responsibility. A woman came to me many years ago when I was living in L.A. Her friend flew her from Illinois in the middle of the country to Los Angeles to meet Drew. And Drew is going to do your astrology chart for you. Her name was Barbara. Very nice lady. And Barbara had contracted cancer of the... I don't know. Pancreas or bowel. I don't remember. So I sat down and I was talking to Barbara about her chart, which I had calculated. And then I said to her, well, to what extent have you created this cancer for yourself? What? I said, how have you participated in the creation of this cancer? What are you talking about? Well, you have to take some responsibility for it. Why do you need it? How is it helping you? I don't need it. I don't want it. No, it's just completely in victim mode. But I was very, calm, and I was confronting her in a nice way. And I made her look at it. And she was very nice to me. And then they left, and she was so angry with me. She took her friend. How dare you take me to that man? Who the hell does he think he is anyway? And on it went, unbeknownst to me. And then I met Barbara one time again about 8 years later in Seattle. And Barbara was fully healed. Her cancer had gone away years before. And I said, hi, Barbara, how are you? Nice to see you. She says, thank you, you saved my life. Well, I didn't save her life. I just pointed out that she needed to take responsibility for what happened to her in her life and get off the victim thing. Oh, it's just me, poor me. Look what's happened to me. Well, then why don't you become empowered to change that? If you won't even begin to try to look at it in that manner, how can you change it? It's no possibility. Maybe you get lucky and it goes away. But we are creative beings, my friends. Whatever happens to us, we have created. We have participated in the creation of it. Don't you tell me that I created cancer for myself. I never once wanted it. No, you did not create it consciously. You created it unconsciously. How many times have you met the guy and his biggest dream is to make a whole lot of money? I just want to become so wealthy. and he makes millions. And then he loses it all. Was that part of the dream too? Did he? Was that part of the creative vision? Of course it wasn't. How would he lose it all? Because unconsciously, I don't deserve it. I don't deserve to have money. I'm not a good guy. I won't use it right. You know, my dad told me money's evil. You know, my mom told me that only rich people are all bad. And if you're rich, you're bad. You can't be good. Huh? And this is the subtext. This is what's going on underneath. These are, you see the conflicting ideas here? I'm throwing a few at you at the same time. Now, this guy will go again and he'll make a whole bunch more money yet again. And what'll happen?
He'll lose it again.
He'll lose it again. Why? Because he didn't change the underlying belief. Little girl, she's got her mommy and daddy. Dad leaves. Goes away. So her mom, it's her and mom. Mom raises her. What's the belief? Two words. What's the belief in that girl's mind? Men? Men leave. Men leave, right? She grows up into an adult. She gets married. She finds herself a nice man. She gets married. What's he do? He leaves her. Why? She's a good girl. She's a good wife. Because that's her belief. Can you change it? Yeah. That's the answer to all your questions. Can you change it? Yes. How many people change it? Lots of people do. The majority of them? No. First of all, you have to become aware of how powerful you are. If you think all this is happening to me, there's nothing I can do, well, you're finished. There is nothing you can do. You're powerless. You're a victim. But if you really realize that somehow or other, directly, indirectly, consciously, unconsciously, I have created this, then uncreate it. Create something different. Create something better. How long will it take? I don't know. It might take you 6 months. It might take you six lifetimes. I don't know. I suggest you start now, though.
Is it irrelevant, then?
Of course, it's irrelevant. In the spiritual world, there is no time. There's no time. There's no future. There's no past. There's only now. As we sit here, all we have is this moment. We are all here now. Some reason or another, here we are. You know, if an earthquake came and swallowed up Enniskerry, we could be gone in a moment. So all we really have is this moment right now. All of our energy, all of our focus, all of our presence of mind, all of our consciousness, all of our awareness, all of our creativity must be injected into this moment. Which moment? Every moment. Don't let your mind wander. What do people do? They, past and future, they regret the past and they fear the future. Right? Do you know how much time people spend doing that? Regretting the past and fearing the future? A lot of time. If you're regretting the past, that means you think your mind is in the past, not the present. If your mind's not in the present, how are you going to create your future? If you're fearing your future, your mind is not in the present. Your power is only in the present. There's only the eternal now. Be here now. Power of now. That's all you have. You have this. We can't control the future. And we can't change the past. All we can is change is our response to it. Right? So unless you bring your full power of concentration and creativity into the present, questions? Comments? Give us an example now. We've spoken about a lot of things. Give us some examples of what we've been talking about. Of a person or yourself. But you don't have to name names. Just give us an example of these things that you've seen in your life.
The abandonment issue is the one we talked about. The girl whose father left and then she gets married and the husband goes. Created it.
There you go. Believed it. Believed it. Created it.
But she doesn't know that because...
No, she doesn't know that.
She doesn't know that, but it's happening unconsciousness with him.
Right.
So why she can't be cured herself in that case?
You have to become aware of where the problem comes from. What the cause of the problem is. As you know, in Western medicine, they don't treat the cause of the disease. They only treat symptoms. They don't get a full in-depth analysis of what is your lifestyle, what's going on in your life. They don't even ask you. You're lucky if you get 5 minutes. And, you know, the first thing they throw at you are different drugs, usually. They don't know how to...
root cause.
Yeah, they don't know how to diagnose. They don't diagnose. They do process of elimination. Well, we're going to do about 20 tests on you. Oh, okay, not this, not this, not this, not this, not this, not this, not... Oh, we know you don't have any of these things. Oh, okay. What's my diagnosis? They stumble on it. They don't actually know. They stumble onto it. Most of them. And they treat the symptoms.
I have a friend who, and I think she's aware of doing it, but she's constantly recreating illness after illness after illness after illness. And I've now watched her go from doing it to herself, and now her little daughter, who's like not even two, is doing the same thing. And from what she has said to me, it sounds like it's a need for attention. When she's sick, she gets attention.
Yeah.
And she said that to me, and I'm like, well, you know, that's why you do it. And she's aware of it, but she won't change it.
No. Well, they have a whole syndrome, Creutzfeldt-Jakob syndrome, where the mother creates all these problems for the child that the child doesn't have. And they had this one woman in Florida, her child had like 16 surgeries.
Gosh.
I mean, the woman just she lived at the hospital with this little girl. And finally, they went to court. They had to go to court and take the child away from the woman and give the child to... And the parents got divorced and the child went to live with the father and never had another problem. Never. Just never a problem to begin with. That's extreme. But that's an actual syndrome.
What's it called?
Creutzfeldt-Jakob syndrome. It's real sick. Desperate for attention.
I'm Gosai wanted to talk about this. You know, you say that in modern science only look at the symptoms. Like, they try to control the things of people that never actually want you to cure the other people. They just want to keep taking the drugs so they can make the money. They all are controlling this stuff. And I was reading about one of the case history. This woman actually, she's 54 years old and she has 25 years history of diabetic. And because of that, she's taking the medicine and they're controlling the diabetes, but it's also creating extra four more diseases. So you end up taking 20 different kind of medicine, right, for 19 different kind of secondary complications because of diabetes.
Yeah.
They're designed that way.
Hmm?
The medicines are designed.
Designed that way,
yeah.
Right? And then she went to see like a naturopath, right, and he worked through the whole thing, and now she's fine.
Yeah, because she's going to see a healer as opposed to a...
Actually, I'm doing naturopathy, and we know that when our consultation, first consultation, it takes about actually a couple of hours anyway.
Spend
more than an hour and 10 pages. You take the history of their parents, their grandparents, and their what's going on, the whole thing. And it's 10 pages of questionnaire. I don't know how the doctor do it, like in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, you know, like you say, the pharmaceutical industry has a great investment in all of that. So, important thing to remember is you're a creative being. We create our own reality. So if we created it one way, we can create it a different way. I'm not saying it's easy, necessarily, but it can be done. Some people, when they're committed and they're dedicated, it can happen more effectively and more quickly, making change. Okay, so let's do some meditation. How many here have not done any meditation ever? Just one person? Okay. We don't really do a lengthy, involved meditation. We just do fairly short ones. Most important thing when you do meditation is to relax. Just to relax. Eyes, breathe, relax, and let go. Deeply, deeply relax. Breathe and let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body. Totally, completely relax. Breathe. And let go. High above, envision coming down from the heavens a beautiful beam of radiant pearl-white light coming down, down, all the way down, entering to the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms, legs, out the bottom of your feet, into the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. Deeply, deeply relax and let go. Be at peace. All right. You're in a boat, and you're floating ever so gently upon a crystal clear, calm lake. Feel yourself gently moving along in the boat. On the lake are lotus and lily pads with lotus flowers and lily flowers scattered here and there. Around the lake is the most beautiful nature, natural environment that you've ever seen. Trees, plants, flowers, fruit-bearing trees, fragrant, beautiful. Heavenly. Gentle breeze is blowing your boat to the shore. And the boat comes to rest upon glittering golden sand at the edge of the lake. And there is a person waiting for you, greeting you, stepping to the edge of the water to help you out of the boat. Who is this person? Do you know this person? Or is this the first time you've seen him or her? How do they greet you? What is their attitude? What is their state of mind? Are they happy to see you, unhappy, or neutral? Now, there's something they want you to see. They want to show you. So where do they take you, and what do they show you? It's something they feel you need to see. They feel you need to know. It's very important for you to see or to know this. What is it? How do you receive it? Are you reluctant? Are you open? Do you receive it? Do you reject it? Are you neutral about it? What are you to do with this? Will you do it? Okay. Thank this person or not. You're back at the water's edge. You step back into your boat. Calmly, you float away. Out into the lake. Amidst the lotuses and the lilies and all the beauty surrounding you, at peace, gently rocking with the motion, peace, peace. Peace. All right. If you haven't completed the meditation, please continue. If you've completed all the steps, then slowly return to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. Open your eyes when you're ready. How'd you do?
Okay.
Okay. Would anybody like to share their journey with us? You don't have to. No one is going to force you. Would anybody like to share their experience?
I got visual confirmation of the place that I want to move to. That I made a decision on earlier this week, and I was shown perhaps somewhere in the same region that I was showing on a map.
And who showed you?
I have a little monk guide. I have
no, so your guide appeared.
Yeah, he showed.
And he showed you this?
He just kind of showed me a map and kind of gave me an idea.
Very good. And how did you feel about it?
Yeah, good. Kind of baffled how it will come about, but it's all good. It's not in my hands, it's a happy day.
Exactly. It's not. You see, she's right. All you got to do is see what it is you want. You have to have your vision and hold your vision. How will I ever make this happen? That's not your concern. It's not. As a creative being, you don't have to worry about that. If you worry about that, you're taking away from the creation of your vision. It's like, what would be an example? You want to build a house, so you have a vision of your house. But you're not an architect. So how are you going to get it on plans? Oh, Well, I think I'll hire an architect. Now you got the plans, but you're not a builder. How are you going to get it built? Well, get a builder. See, you don't have to do that stuff. There are people and forces, and you don't always even need to know how it's come about. Anybody else? Yes? No?
I actually started I'm tired tonight, so I started dreaming, proper dream, like, not...
So you fell asleep, is what you're telling me.
I fell asleep, but I was able to... I don't know if it was... Sometimes I can watch myself dream. I know I'm in a dream before I've actually fallen asleep. It happens to me quite often when I'm falling asleep. So I was in that dream state, and... I had seen at the side of the lake a wizard wearing a hat with stars and dark, dark blue navy. And couldn't see their face. I don't know if it was male, if they were male or female. And they led me to a castle. But the castle, by the time I was in the castle, I was definitely falling asleep. You know. And I don't know what that was about. I was finding it hard to...
Well, one thing, one thing you have to do is stay awake.
Exactly.
In your meditation.
But I am looking for somewhere to live at the moment, so maybe it's a vision. I'm going to live in a castle.
Well, I would believe that about you, Janice. Oh, sincerely. I wouldn't be at all surprised.
Well, the wizard has something to do, something significant for me, I think. Because just...
Well, maybe it'll come about in a very magical way.
Maybe.
It may mean that. Anybody else?
Well, I was given, it was like, I thought, a bicycle lamp.
A bicycle?
Like a lamp.
Lamp.
Like a light.
That you put on the front of a bicycle?
I felt it was, yes. And
who gave it to you?
The person that I met when I got out of the boat.
Can you describe that person?
I can, yes. It's my nephew. He died recently.
How old is he?
25.
So he greeted you?
He did.
Wonderful. And what was his state of mind?
Good. Very good.
Excellent.
Very at peace. And really happy to see him.
Yeah. Very good. And he gave you this light.
Yes.
And what are you to do with it?
Well, I got back into the boat with it, and I was holding it up. I think it's on my journey.
I wonder if you're not supposed to shed some light on his death. Yeah. Shed some light on his death. Yeah, I've done a lot of guided meditation work with people who have lost their children, who have died untimely and through abortion, very successfully. And, you know, maybe his mother needs to meet him in meditation. I had a lady once... her son was, I think, like 16, 17. And, in fact, it was back in the days when I used to come to Ireland once every year, once every 2 years. And the 1 year I saw her and I did the boy's chart for her, and I said, the trouble he's going through will end in whatever it was, September. And it did. And he had sort of pulled his life together and everything was going fine. And I didn't know that, but that's what had happened. Then I saw her a year later. And he died. He was killed on a motorcycle, which he lost control of and plowed into a wall. And he died instantly. And she was bewildered because she didn't know if it was intentional or an accident. That's what she was bewildered about. His life was now turning around favorably. So I said, well, that's no problem. We can figure that out. We can find that out easily. So I took her into meditation. And he came in the meditation, just like he came, your nephew came in this meditation, like that. And he assured her that it was an accident. And he didn't mean to do it. He had lost control of the bike. Slippery or something or other it was. And, you know, I mean, it didn't bring him back, but it put her mind at ease. So she was no longer wondering what had happened. You know, because there's probably somebody suffering over his death. You know what I mean? So very nice. So I'm just wondering whether that light is for you or whether it's connected to him and his passing. Someone else should be hearing about this meditation. Your sister. Anybody else? Pamela?
It was definitely my mother that I came to meet.
She's alive or not alive?
She's not alive.
Okay.
But she came and I just took me by the hand and then put her arm around me and we walked, and that's as far as I got. I don't know what she was going to show me. I felt maybe I was a bit reluctant to see it.
Well, that'll do it. That'll put an end to it if you're too reluctant.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And what was her attitude when you met her?
It was like she was delighted to see me.
So, positive.
Vice versa,
yeah. So, I can't say for sure, but I would assume that it would have been a positive thing she wanted to show you.
Yeah.
That's what I would think. Because just like real life, if something's up, you know something's up, you know.
Yeah.
If, you know, if somebody says to you, can I talk to you for a minute? If something's up, you can feel it immediately. You know something's not right. They're not just going to show you what they bought at Dunn's Stores. Yeah. So, similarly. So what you should do, just go back in the meditation of your own accord and let her show you.
Mm-hmm.
So good. Congratulations on doing it your first time. There's different kinds of meditation. This happens to be one kind. I like this. It works real well with groups of people. And I mean, you can also make your mind blank and think of nothing. That's meditation too. Anybody else? Antoinette?
The first time I met him was Paramahansa Yogananda.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. And he sat me down and he said, I'm going to show you this meditation. I want you to have this experience.
Mm.
Lovely.
So then he took you through, or he showed you a technique? Or?
Not really. I mean, I know about his Kriya Yoga.
Yeah.
I know the technique. I do meditate.
Yeah, I know.
Suggested to me that I might
do it every day for an hour. Very good.
I'm not very disciplined.
In Los Angeles, there's a place called the Lake Shrine. Have you been there?
No, I haven't. I've heard about it.
Yeah.
I went there.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's right off Sunset Boulevard, right by the ocean. It's maybe a half a mile in from the ocean, and it's Paramahansa Yogananda's Self-Realization Fellowship. It's a big lake. Well, it's small lake. And it's beautifully landscaped, trees and everything all around. And as you walk around it, there's a nice little path around it. As you walk around it, he has different shrines. There's a shrine to Jesus and a shrine to Krishna. And every religion is included. Everything's in there. And you can sit at benches at the side of the lake. And on the lake is a houseboat. And the houseboat is, you know, it's anchored into place. And that's where he used to live.
Wow.
In, yeah, in that houseboat when he lived in Los Angeles. And you know who he is? Paramahansa Yogananda. He wrote autobiography of a yogi. Wonderful book. Wonderful book. Highly recommended.
Nigel just bought that book some weeks ago for me.
Who did?
Nigel.
Yeah, it's really a nice book. He has lovely energy. And when he died, his body didn't decay because he was in samadhi. I don't know. I don't remember all the details, but his body didn't decay for like months and months. He's from Bengal. He's Bengali.
How long has he lasted, if you want?
Pardon?
I have all his lessons, if you want.
All his lessons?
Kriya Yoga.
Kriya Yoga lessons.
This happens to a lot of saints when they die. Well, they wouldn't mm-hmm. at the time, but their bodies don't decay. Like.
They weren't saints at the time?
No.
Oh, I assure you, they were. Yeah, you know, whether the church recognizes you or not, my dear, really, is neither here nor there.
Exactly.
You're either there or you're not there. Anybody else want to share their map or their light or their meditation session? I was going to tell you about I forgot to mention this. This is the monthly planetary planner. It's on the table right out here. This is October, and November is out there as well. You got the email? This is a very simple thing. I calculate, and it tells you gold days, silver days, bronze days, and gray days of the month. It has no connection to your personal birth chart. It is only where the planets are in the sky, and it gives you the times of the days that they shift. So it's very simple. I made it real simple. Gold days are highly favorable days for success in all endeavors. Silver days are very favorable days. Bronze are average days. And gray are problematic days and should be avoided for important work. Work such as, you know, work, business, or purchases. You're buying something. But anyway, that's available. It's also on my website if you're interested. You're welcome to have that. Pandit Samavedula, who is an Indian pandit, he came here in Chandrasekhar Samavedula. He came here back in June. He was here for the solstice, and we did some sacred Vedic fire ceremonies and different rituals and pujas and things he does. So he's coming back. He'll be here on November 16th. From 16th to the 23rd. He'll be here only for 1 week. And if anybody's interested in having any of these pujas done, the pujas, puja means the worship of like a certain ritual to help you to clear negative karma, clear difficulties from your life, strengthen things you need to have strengthened, help you with health problems, money problems, marital problems, I mean really anything, business problems, employment problems, whatever it might be. And
he did one for me. I broke my breastbone, and it had been causing problems for a year. And within a couple of days, it kind of started to do pujas when he left and went back to India. All the pain was gone.
Wow. It hasn't really bothered you, I think, since then. He did some for this other gentleman. He actually needed the government to change the laws to benefit a business plan that he had. And that would mean changing laws that have been in existence in Ireland since forever. So good luck with that one. So he had the pundit do sacred fire ceremonies. And the government published in the paper within 30 days from the time that the pundit had started those ceremonies. Pundit means priest. The government is now changing the laws. So, there you go. It's pretty potent. So, you might benefit from that. Well, we'll send out a mail. If you're on our mailing list, on our email mailing list, then you'll get the mailer with more details. I'm not sure about the fire, the sacred fire, because it's November in Ireland. Say no more. Yeah, well, maybe we should figure that out then. He wants to do a satsang. Maybe we just do a satsang for an evening. A mela. Satsang is a congregation of sat, of saintly persons.
Meeting of truth. Yeah. Satsang, like, that's for you, you know, the wise words from, like, you know, somebody, like a saint, they've got satsang, sang mean with somebody, and sant mean, like he was talking about, sitting with, like, a wise person, is like a satsang. That's what we're doing here, man.
Yeah. This is a satsang.
This is satsang, exactly. Yeah.
Because the goal is truth. The goal, it's a higher goal, it's to raise consciousness. It's to realize something, to lift you out of your, no offense, your mundane existence, your day-to-day routine. Well, we're all caught up in that, naturally. And we have responsibilities and we have families and whatever else we might have. Okay. Anybody want to share anything?
Can I ask something? See, like, this yoga and mantras, actually, how they affect different kind of, like a Mahamrityunjaya mantra, actually this is for disease and, you know,
yeah, longevity.
That before your timing actually is the
correct
that, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So how, and like Lakshmi mantra is for like prosperity, mm-hmm, right? And Ganesha mantra is to clear the negativity and clear the picture for that.
Yeah.
So how these things work actually? I know a little bit and I was told in India, but I want to hear from you.
Mantra is used, you know, we also do mantra meditation. I didn't really get into mantra much. We did mantras at the beginning. And mantra is a sacred sound vibration. Sanskrit is, you know, arguably oldest language. And it's called the Devanagari, Deva Nagari, the language that's spoken in the cities of the gods, of divine beings. It's a much higher vibration. So when you use mantras, which are prayers like Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, that's a mantra. It vibrates on a much higher level. There's really only two things you can do with your speech. You can bless or you can curse. If you come right down to it. So if I tell you, have a nice day, what is that?
Blessing.
If you say, in Ireland they say, safe home, which means, I hope you get home safely. I have to translate that for the website. Safe home. That's a blessing. So, blessings are very simple. If somebody says to you, go to hell, that's not a blessing. That's a curse of sorts. So, everything we say, and a lot of things we say are neutral, but the whole idea is that everything we say should be a blessing for ourselves or others, for everybody. So a mantra is taking that concept to a much, much higher level of vibration because of the transcendental nature of the mantra of Sanskrit, the sound itself.
Letters and syllables that you found. Why
those? I can't remember the name of the book, but I could find it. Anyway, it helps us to transcend our identification with our material reality. It takes us beyond it. Mantra means, man is mind, and tra means to carry across. So it carries the mind across the identification with matter. Mantras are directed toward the gods. When we say gods, we don't mean a bunch of gods as much as we mean, there's God. But God has many manifestations and many qualities. If I say to you, who is God? What do you tell me? Tell me his name, I'll say. Tell me God's name. See, if you have a Christian background, he doesn't have a name. He's God. You might say his name is Yahweh or Jehovah, but you wouldn't. You might say his name is Jesus, who's the Son of God. But in yoga philosophy, if you ask me what God's name is, I'd say his name is Ram. His name is Krishna. It's Govinda. It's Parashuram. It's Gopinath. It's Purushottam. It's Padmanabha. It's Chakradhara. It's Aravindaksha. And so on. And I could go on and on and on. These are all names for God, describing certain qualities. So we use mantra to communicate with God. And it's like getting on the wavelength. A mantra is like, suppose we want to talk to Martin, your husband. How are we going to talk to Martin? We're going to pick up the mobile. We're going to dial his number. Hey, Martin, how's it going? There's Martin, the other end. We're on the wavelength. Correct? We're on Martin's wavelength. Connects us right to him. So, and, well, you know, it's not even this little thing in your hand. It's pretty amazing when you think about it. It's a little mobile. So, in the same manner, you can communicate with various aspects of God, the goddess, the divine masculine, the divine feminine. Because in yoga philosophy, there's no such thing as divine masculine, no feminine. It doesn't exist. You gotta have one and the other. So you can communicate by getting on the wavelength. And you do that through mantra, meditation, prayer. But this is what mantra is. It's a sound vibration that puts you on the wavelength with the deity or aspect of God that you're trying to reach, depending on your purpose. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're invited for tea, if you like. Thank you. Om Tat Sat. Hare Krishna.
The pages from previous